All right, we're in John chapter 4. We're going to finish this chapter tonight. We're still going to be in lesson 5 tonight. Just as you notice on the screen, the lesson 5 had two kind of sections. The first section was retiring to Galilee. That's Jesus and the Samaritan woman. The town of Sychar, as they came to him, we've talked about that. And in the second half, we're going to talk about his preaching in the city of Capernaum. And so I think we'll be transitioning to that. But we have a few more verses in John chapter 4, one more miracle, actually, that Jesus performed there. And we'll talk about that. But we're kind of finishing up with the Jesus and the Samaritan woman. We talked about how the response from the people of Sychar, the result was that many more believed because of his word. And we talked about the fact that initially they might have had a response of belief because of whose word? The woman. But now they came, and again, her invitation, there's a simple thing when we talk about the invitation of Jesus Christ, her invitation was simple, come and see. Come and see if this is the Christ. And they came and they saw and they heard and they listened. And they came away with the conclusion, based on what Jesus said and what he taught, that he was the one they needed to believe in. And we talked about the fact that we need to have a faith of our own, that somebody else may have come and invited us to come and see, invited us to come to read the things that God has revealed to us in his word. But at some point in time, you know, whether it's a parent, whether it's a friend, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a neighbor, we've got to get to the point where we come and see, and then we draw our conclusions. And we have our own faith that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And that we no longer believe because of what somebody else perhaps had taught us. And we think about Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, how that Paul didn't want anybody serving as a Christian, following Jesus because of what he taught them. He didn't want them following after him. He wanted their faith to be in Jesus Christ and to consider themselves Christians and not Paulites, as it were, or anybody else. So we need to have a faith of our own. And again, that's critical that we learn, that we hear, that we believe. So going on in John chapter 4, let's go ahead and read, if I can get someone to volunteer, verses 43 through the end of the chapter. John chapter 4, 43 through 54. Randy?
Sure. John 4:43. After the 2 days he went forth from there in Galilee, where Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. So when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things that he did in Jerusalem at the feast. They themselves also went to the feast. Therefore he came again to Cana of Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And there was a royal official whose son was sick at Capernaum. When he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea into Galilee, he went to him and was imploring him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. So Jesus said to him, "Unless you people see signs and wonders, you simply will not believe." The royal official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus said to him, "Go, your son lives." The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and started off. As he was going down, his slaves met him, saying that his son was living. So he inquired of them the hour when he began to get better. They said to him, "Yesterday, at the seventh hour, the fever left him." So the father knew that it was at that hour in which Jesus said to him, "Your son lives," and he himself believed, and his whole household. This is again a second sign that Jesus performed when he had come out of Judea into Galilee.
All right, thank you. So again, we read verse 43 that after 2 days, again, 2 days that he spent with the people of Sychar, teaching them, revealing himself as he had revealed himself to the Samaritan woman, who he was, and no doubt teaching them what he had taught the Samaritan woman in terms of true worship, in terms of the kingdom that he had taught Nicodemus about, and teaching them so that they might believe. And so after 2 days, again, verse 43, he went forth from there into Galilee. So really, again, he was in Samaria there. He goes forth into Galilee. We know in that chapter he ends up in the city of Cana. He had already been there before. We, as we heard the reference, that's where he what?
Raised the Lord.
Turned the water into wine. So he's on there, but we note that in verse 44 that Jesus himself testified that the prophet has no honor in his own country. His own country being where?
Where he grew up.
Where, which is? Jesus of?
Nazareth.
So did he go close to Nazareth? But he did not go to Nazareth. And we know that again later on in the Gospels we'll read how that he did go to his home at one point in time. And did he get a good reception there?
Kind of like, who does he think he is?
Yeah, we saw him grow up. And here he cites here in verse 44 again, did Jesus know the reaction he would get in Nazareth? Yeah. He himself knew that a prophet has no honor in his own country. He knew that people would just look at him as though, we saw you're the carpenter's son. And who do you think you are? That he would have tough roads to hoe in terms of preaching the gospel in Nazareth. And so he, as you can see, in essence, kind of passed by. And I don't know exactly the route, but certainly he had an opportunity to stop in Nazareth, but he did not. And it says, so when he came to Galilee, verse 45, the Galileans received him. Having seen all the things that he did in Jerusalem at the feast, that's a reference to what? When it talks about having seen all the things that he did.
Chapter 2.
I'm sorry?
Chapter 2. It said after he had driven everybody out from the temple that first time, but there were many other signs that he did.
Right.
In the city of Jerusalem, all the people were there.
Yeah, verse 23 of John chapter 2. Absolutely. So it says, when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in his name, beholding his signs which he was doing. So we read here in verse 45, when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things he did in Jerusalem. So obviously part of the audience there in Jerusalem at the feast were some of these Galileans, and they had seen what he had did. They'd seen the miracles. And so when he came to Cana in Galilee, they knew about him. They had seen the signs that he had performed. Verse 46, we then see Jesus, we read of Jesus, and interestingly enough, it's often called Jesus' second miracle. Was it his second miracle? No, because we just talked about how in chapter 2, verse 23, it talked about the fact that while he's in Jerusalem, he had performed many signs. And so this is not, as it were, only the second time he'd used his miraculous power. But in the Gospel of John, it's the second specific sign, the second specific miracle that Jesus points out. So in verse 46, again, we see he came, therefore, again to Cana of Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son was sick at Capernaum. So we see that, again, he's in Cana of Galilee. This is where he turned the water to wine. We read that there was in Capernaum a royal official whose son was sick. And as he came then to Cana of Galilee, a royal official, we said, heard that Jesus was there. Again, approximately 25 miles, this royal official came from Capernaum to Cana, about a 25-mile trip. To you and I, not a big deal. To anybody who has a car, you jump in a car 25 miles, you're there in 25 minutes, right? But if you're walking by foot, a 25-mile trip, if you're walking 2 miles an hour, that's going to take you about 12 and a half hours, isn't it? If I'm doing the math right. So that's, again, we take that for granted. But again, it was a 25-mile trip to, as we read there, implore Jesus to come down and heal his son. Again, how sick was his son?
To the point of death.
To the point of death. Again, this was very serious. And if you could imagine having a child, those of you who are parents, to know that you had a child that was at the point of death, how comfortable would you feel taking a 12-hour journey by foot away from your sick child? How much faith would you need to have that that would be a worthwhile trip? You need a lot of faith. But it's interesting, and we'll talk about the faith that he had. You read then in verse 49, what did he ask Jesus to do? Come down.
Lest my child die.
Before my child dies. Please hurry. He's at the point of death. Now, just that question, or that request, that imploring that he did, indicated that he believes that Jesus could do something about this sick child, didn't it? You can do something about my child that is about to die. He believed that Jesus needed to be where his son was, did he not? Again, come down before my child dies. Again, and as we covered the history and geography of the Bible, when the New Testament uses the word come down, how does the Bible use the word come down? What does that mean?
Elevation.
Come down in elevation. Okay, so most of the cities around the Sea of Galilee were, in general, what was their elevation? Yeah, just barely higher than the sea. So most of the time, if you're going to a city around the Sea of Galilee, you're going down to that city. But the point is that his understanding was, as you and I would, if we knew of somebody that could heal our child of something that they were about to die from, isn't it kind of natural to say, you need to come to my child? You need to come be there. You need to do something to my child. You need to be there. And so this royal official said, please come down. You've got to go to where my child is. And the emphasis on you need to go to where my child is to illustrate the point of this miracle, isn't it? Because he believed that if Jesus was going to do something about his child's situation, he had to physically be there. And we recognize that he had faith, but he didn't have the faith to understand that Jesus didn't need to be where his child was. Is your hand up?
Kind of. Stories like this aspect, especially early on, the work of Jesus, it's kind of impressive to stop and think how the Jewish mindset was towards the coming Messiah and what they would have expected. At the end of his life, we see that everyone was saying, hailing him as the coming king, coming into Jerusalem, he's going to reign, they expect him to be a visible king. And how many of them, we don't, outside of Naaman being sent to the king of Israel to be healed of his leprosy, how often did people come before their kings asking them to heal them from their sickness, asking them to do all these things for them outside of get justice for me from my neighbor, perhaps.
Right.
But their understanding of who Jesus was, what he was coming to do, or at least the Messiah, what they believed from the signs that they saw in Jerusalem, they recognized that it was something more than just a physical king that he was coming to be. And that type of faith, even at just a few signs, perhaps, is pretty significant.
It is. It's significant. And they had seen, like you said, I don't know how many signs they saw in Jerusalem, but they had seen some. And this noble royal official had seen enough to say, again, in his mind, I have a child up nine to death. I perhaps saw what he did in Jerusalem. I don't care how long it takes me, I'm going to go to him. Because he can do something that nobody has ever been able to do before. But the interesting thing is, And sometimes we struggle a little bit with some of these things because we do recognize that this man had faith, didn't he? To come to Jesus. But what is it that Jesus said after, again, verse 47, when he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea and Galilee, he went to him and was requesting him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. We recognize the faith. What is it that Jesus said, though, in verse 48?
Then you won't believe unless you see signs and wonders.
Almost being critical, is he not, of somebody in terms of a lack of faith? Being critical of the fact that, again, remember when we talked about the temptations of Christ, how that Satan tempted Jesus to prove who he was. And Jesus' response to Satan was, "Thou shalt not put the Lord your God to the test." Were there people during the ministry of Christ who continually put Jesus to the test? Prove who you are. Jesus here in verse 48, interestingly enough, again, makes this statement, "Unless you see the signs and wonders, you will not believe." Now, when he says, "unless you," who's he talking to?
A nobleman.
Perhaps a nobleman. Perhaps he did lack faith. Were there perhaps others in the audience at that time who were waiting to see if Jesus would do this miracle just to, again, yeah, do one more just to prove yourself? Jenny?
I have a footnote on this verse. It says the Greek for you is plural twice.
Okay. And somehow, yeah, y'all, yeah, he was in the south of me. Let y'all see something. And indeed, there was a culture, a mindset among many, wasn't there? That again, that Jesus needed to continue to prove himself. There was a mindset among many. And when we get to John chapter 6, after Jesus fed the 5,000, were they happy? Did they see the sign and satisfy themselves as to who Jesus was? But then they asked him later, after he fed the 5,000, what are you going to do to prove who you are?
They wanted more.
They wanted more.
And especially the Jews, he knows that about these things.
Well, and these Galileans, again, and I believe it was a general statement. It was for all who would hear that Jesus says, unless you see signs and wonders, you simply will not believe. And the question is that, are we going to accept the evidence? Because again, this royal official had seen evidence. He had seen enough to come to him, but perhaps he was still wanting proof. Perhaps there were others yet in Cana of Galilee where he had already performed a miracle, who were still wanting more proof. And Jesus asked them, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. Again, signs and wonders, interesting that this terminology, the idea of signs representing the word, and this is the word we talked about many months ago already, that John used the word for signs, which meant a distinguishing mark, something that was a proof of authentication. And so the idea of signs is the deeper truth. There's deep meaning to the idea of signs. That there's a lesson to be learned. There's something to be gained from a sign. Versus wonders, and in general, that word has more to do with the attention or focus to the physical side of the miracle. This is my terminology as I looked at all the definitions. It's the wow factor. The wonders, wow, you know, that's amazing. And you could be, have a sense of wonder and completely miss the sign. You can be wowed, amazed by what somebody does and completely miss the fact that Jesus, again, did a miracle that proves who he is. And sometimes, again, are there people today who are looking for the wow factor? We're looking to be amazed, we're looking to be astounded, and miss the sign, miss the authentication, the proof of who Jesus is, that put the stamp on him as being the Messiah, the Son of God. So again, we see there in verse 48, Jesus talking about the fact that unless you people see signs, the authentication, the marks of who I am, and wonders, again, the amazement, the wow. Ready?
The New American Standard has a, I think that's what you've got too, but there's a marginal reference every time the word
signs, yeah.
And it says, a testing.
Right.
And when I see a testing, it makes me think of Acts 2:22.
Yeah.
When it says, Jesus the Nazarene man attested to you by God with miracles and wonders and signs, which God performed through him in your midst.
It's a special word.
It's a testimony.
Yeah.
Attesting that this is the Son of God.
It's a proof of authenticity. You know, it's that seal that says this person is the genuine article, the real, it's the Messiah.
Attested in Acts 2:22 also has a marginal reference that says exhibited or accredited.
Exactly. So that's that whole idea of, and it's interesting again that I believe when we covered this that only one time did Jesus use, that John used the word for miracle as opposed to this word for sign. We know that John wrote this gospel that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ and believe and have life in his name. He wanted to point out these attestating miracles, the proof of authenticity of who he was. But it's interesting, Jesus himself said, you're not going to believe unless you see, he said, both the signs and the wonders, the wow, the spectacular. And again, there's the temptation for all of us, mankind, to want the wow and miss the substance.
But it's interesting, the only people who actually could attest to the fact that of Jesus' miracle is the guy and his family when he got back home, and us as the reader. The people who were there heard Jesus say, your son lives, go home. But they never knew, you know, unless they were supposed to overview about it later. But at that time, all these people that were seeking a sign and wonder, really, they get one.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's interesting. And in fact, did Jesus speak in other situations about those who constantly were looking for the proof, the signs? Yeah, if you look at Matthew chapter 16 and verses 1 through 4. Bruce, could you read that for us? Matthew 16, 1 through 4.
And the Pharisees and the Sadducees came and trying him, asked him to show them a sign from heaven. But he answered and he said unto them, when it is evening, you say that it is fair weather, for the heaven is red, and in the morning will be foul weather. Today, for the heaven is red and lowly, and you know how to discern the face of the heaven, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. And the evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there is no sign to be given unto it, but the sign of Jonah. And he left them and he departed.
So when he talked about the Pharisees and the Sadducees seeking after a sign, again, is it obviously we talk about signs or miracles were done for what purpose?
To confirm
the word, to confirm that, and so Jesus indeed, and in John chapter 5, Jesus talked about that one of the witnesses of who he was the signs that he performed. But when he talks about the Pharisees and Sadducees testing him to show them a sign from heaven, was it the fact that they had just never seen a sign, and so they just needed one to convince them? When they talked about, show us a sign from heaven, and in verse 4 Jesus says, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. Was it kind of an insatiable appetite for signs that show us something, and then show us something more, and then show us something more, and then they just would never be satisfied? And the fact is that if someone showed a truly miraculous sign, how many true signs, true miracles do we need to see to believe? Should we be? James?
You know, Chris, I think that's an interesting contrast with John chapter 20, about verse 29, after the Lord revealed himself to Thomas, and Thomas said, "My Lord and my God," Jesus said to him, "Blessed are those who don't see and yet believe." So the ultimate goal that Christ had was for people to believe based on evidence. He's not here to put on a show. It's to believe what the Bible says. And that not only applies to them, but to us. That's what our faith should be. You'll have people today who say, well, maybe, I think even Robert Harkwriter in a video series he had told a story about preaching in Melbourne, Australia, and he had one guy who told him, well, maybe if I could see Jesus perform one miracle, I could believe. But in John 20, verse 29, Jesus dispels that. The evidence is here and it's clear. The miracles had a purpose, and it wasn't to show off. This isn't a magic show. It's to confirm something. It's an accreditation. But we have this confirmed and written down. So, like Romans 1 tells us, we look around us, there's a world, there's a universe. It didn't just wash up out of the sea and get struck by lightning and go from you to you. We were created with purpose, and we're here, and the evidence is here, and that's what true faith is. It doesn't say faith comes by seeing and seeing by a miracle. Faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word of God.
Now, if you go to a magic show, and the magician shows you one magic trick, are you satisfied with that?
No.
Inherently, if you see something that amazes you, what do you want from that magician? You're like, I mean, it's like eating one potato chip, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to be satisfied with one. If you're there simply for the entertainment purpose, if you're there for the wow factor, you're not going to, you know, okay, I showed you one magic trick, now, you know, you can go home. No, we want more. We want more entertainment. We want to be impressed. We want to be wowed. Appropriate to say it again. I mean, it's to create belief. Now, the interesting thing is that, again, Jesus said to those here in Galilee that unless you see his signs and wonders, you simply will not believe. The interesting thing is that where had he just come from?
Sychar
in Samaria. Did we ever read in his time there about him saying anything to the Samaritans? Did they exhibit any insatiable appetite for miracles from Jesus? No, it's interesting. The Samaritans, we don't read of them pestering Jesus to do another sign. Those people in Samaria went and saw who he was. They listened to him. And they heard from the woman in terms of the things that Jesus knew about the woman, no doubt. But they weren't, and to James' point, they went and they listened. And they sat with Jesus for 2 days, and they heard him preach and teach. And Jesus didn't have to tell them in Samaria, well, unless I do a sign for you, you're not going to believe. They believed based on his teaching. And I think that says a lot about the Samaritans there.
You know, just thinking about signs and miracles and things, people wanted to see sign after sign after sign. And I guess after seeing many of the things that Jesus did, they had a positive association with signs. But even these people in these times that Jesus is speaking to would have the benefit of looking at the Old Testament scripture. And there were some people who saw some miraculous signs and things done by God that I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of. So, you know, it's interesting. Well, show us more, show us more. Well, when the Lord tells you knock it off, it's time to knock it off.
Well, and when the Lord says, unless you stop and think, oh yeah, he's already shown us. He's already displayed his divine power. I've already seen it. Stop and think. Again, and again, get the sign, get the point, get the attestation, and don't just be there for the entertainment, the wow factor of just show me more. Again, get the point. Get the point. So we read again after Jesus says, unless you see the signs and wonders, you simply will not believe. Verse 49, the royal official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Verse 50, Jesus said to him what?
Go,
go, live. Go your way, your son lives. Okay? That's it. It's done. Jesus says, it's taken care of. Go your way, go on your way, your son lives. What was the nobleman's response?
He left.
He believed. It says there in verse 50, go your way, your son lives. The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him. How did he exhibit his belief? He did what Jesus told him to do. Jesus said, go. He went. He left. Again, you apply that to the notion of again, faith only as people use it today. Faith only would say, yeah, I believe what you said, but I don't need to exhibit it by what, you know, by following what you said. And would that be necessarily easy? Again, you've traveled 25 miles by foot, I would suppose. I don't know, maybe in the chariot, it doesn't say. But still, it's a long trip in that day. And you say to Jesus, my child's dying to death. Come down and heal him. And this man you traveled 25 miles to go see says to you, leave. It's done. Would there be something in us that would want to say, can you, are you ready to leave? TJ?
We have instances in the Bible. One of them referred to is Mary and Martha when they sent Jesus for their brother.
Was that what?
Mary and Martha
right.
When they sent Jesus for their brother. He didn't come right away either.
Right.
Because he was trying to show glory.
Right.
He didn't want to go there and say, and then they said, who would Jesus did?
Well,
he hung out for a couple of days and then went.
Again, Jesus is proving who he is. And he didn't need to go there. In fact, the nobleman believed that Jesus needed to be there, and Jesus said, I don't need to be there. Go. He lives. But what I'm trying to say is, again, this man, for him to, again, to go ahead and leave. I come here. I need you to come with me. And he simply says, go. And then to begin that 25-mile walk back, again, there's some faith. Randy?
Well, he didn't just say no. He said, go, your son lives.
Well, yes.
So that's really the statement that the man believed was that your son lives.
Right.
So there wasn't a reason to go.
But his command for what he needed to do was that one word.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just go.
Your son's
fine. He's going to live.
Mafia there too, because the man didn't completely. Well, we don't know that he completely believed, but we know that's all he got. So what else can he do but leave?
Well,
Jesus didn't say, "Hold up a minute, I'm coming with you."
Verse 50 says he believed.
Yeah, he believed the word that Jesus spoke.
To go there from the beginning. I mean, who's going to go that far unless they believe something's going to happen?
But, Joe?
But I think it's noteworthy that he didn't challenge the Lord and say, well, how do I know he lived?
Can
you give me some proof here? He didn't take that attitude when the Lord said, your son, you know, go, your son lives. He had faith and he left. He didn't challenge the Lord in any way.
Well, and to a certain extent, somebody brought him in. Who was that a while ago? Judge Jonathan. Again, Naaman, when he was told what to do, which was simple to also, it began with the word go, and but Naaman himself said, I was looking for more. I was looking for a grand show. And perhaps this nobleman, would there be perhaps the expectation of something more than simply go, your son lives? But the point is, Jesus said it, he did it. And when we read about him believing, it says he believed and he started off. He went back to home, to where his son was. And while he was on his way, what happened? Okay, so his slaves, when it happened, his slaves left immediately. We got to go tell his father. We got to tell him that his son is alive and he's well. So his slaves met him and told him that his son lived. And we then see in verse 52, as perhaps all of us would say, his next question to his slaves was, when did that happen? And would you suppose that he took note when Jesus had told him that his son lives and he was to go home of when that happened?
Yeah.
No. Yes. And so his servants told him, the specific time, the specific hour the fever left him. Now, to me, when it says his fever left him, that was not a 3-day gradual decrease of his fever. He had a fever, and then at a moment he did not have a fever. It left him. Now, when we have a child with 104-degree fever, it does not go away in a matter of an instant. You give him baths, you give him cool compresses, you give him Tylenol, whatever like that, and over a period of time, you hope that the fever goes away. But in this case, again, his slaves told him the specific hour the fever left him. It was not gradual.
And you can see in this one here, you can see the time span. It said yesterday at 1 o'clock. So that means it's already the next day. So
right.
You see that he's taken some time to get this 25 miles already.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruce?
You know, it's amazing that, okay, first of all, we read about the Samaritan woman and how she continually questioned Jesus, you know, and then finally when Jesus mentions, you know, about something that's happened to her, then she kind of like starts believing, but then she continues on, but here in this instance, he believes and he goes.
Yeah. And we talked about, who was it that mentioned the fact that everybody there in Cana would not have known the outcome of what happened, but the end of the chapter mentioned who was it that believed because of this miracle?
The man did.
The man did, and
his whole household.
So, again, it was not necessarily the whole city of Canaan. It wasn't everybody, perhaps in Capernaum, but it was this man and his household that knew that he went to Cana, that Jesus told him, go, his son lives, at the exact moment the fever left him. And when his whole household understood what had happened, they believed. They believed. But again, that's why Jesus performed miracles. So, any other comments then about, again, then verse 54, this again is a second sign that Jesus performed when he had come out of Judea to Galilee. So again, it's the second sign that John took the time to specifically record and note down. But obviously, he performed other miracles. Richard?
You'll remember in Mickey's lessons from time to time, he uses this as one of the illustrations of the fact that miracles are not limited by distance.
Right. And that was the interesting thing, is that perhaps this man believed that if Jesus was physically there, he'd be able to do something to help my son. But what he didn't have the faith to believe was that Jesus didn't need to be there. And yeah, that his miracles were not bound by space and time. You know, that it wasn't a matter of some physical connectivity to the person. Absolutely. Jonathan?
Subject with Jesus and Lazarus later on in the book of John. Here's John 4, and Jesus spoke to the nobleman who he possibly had never met before, met his family, but he was one that came to him. He spoke the word, and the person was healed. He was at the point of death. And when Jesus heard of Lazarus, same thing could have been done. Distance there didn't make any difference.
Right.
Martha's response was to him,
God and His Son cannot do, or at least one of them. Right?
I like this story because it seems to kind of give you closure where some of the other stories don't. Like it gives you more than what people were actually around for. As far as I can tell, John and Jesus never talked to this person ever again. You always wonder where the information came from, but we know that it was inspired, so I get that portion of it. But however, there's nothing to tell you that this is where that story came from. But there's closure in the story where a lot of the other ones there isn't. You just got what was happening around them. But on this one, you know that something else happened because he wasn't at that location anymore when you went to go find out about his son. So that's kind of one of those stories that you're like.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that this man was from what city?
Capernaum.
Where did Jesus spend a lot of his ministry? And that's actually where we're going. Capernaum. Whether he ever actually met with him again, you're absolutely right. We have no idea. But we know that this incident, this time, changed that man's life and his household's life because it created faith in him. And yes, it did very much that kind of put a bow on it to say, he went back, told his household, and he and his household believed. The interesting thing about these two miracles in Cana, who was it that believed from the turning of water to wine? The whole city of Cana?
The servants.
The servants of Jesus and his disciples. It was a limited audience there who believed in this instance of this miracle here.
Actually, it was for us because Jesus even himself was saying, my time has not come. But his mom said, do what he says.
Right. All right. So there was a limited audience of those in both of these miracles that created, that actually drew their faith from what took place. So I thought that was interesting both times. Yeah.
In verse 54, when it says it was the second sign Jesus did when he had come from Judea to Galilee, could that mean it was his second sign in Galilee? Or
yeah.
Because it's obviously not his second sign.
No.
Ever,
no.
But
it's the second one we read of in Galilee. It's the second one that John records. So again, I think we get here. Correct if I'm wrong. I believe John records seven specific, distinct miracles in his gospel. And of these seven, it's the second one. Both of them performed, yes, in Galilee. And so yes, I think it's both. I think it's the fact that it's the second one in Galilee. It's the second one that John recorded.
But you know.
I'm sorry?
I'm telling her signs are not always notable, so there's two different things.
Well, they're usually the same event, but again, as we pointed out, one purpose, is to make them an attestating sign.
Well, that's my point, because the apostles are not just signs, but they don't always be notable. And what I'm trying to say, every sign he did was a miracle. And I'm saying, no, it wasn't. It's all I'm saying.
Well, again, every sign was miraculous in that every sign was from God.
Well, of course. Everything that was inspired to all of them was from God.
Right.
I'm not disputing that. Tommy? I'm talking about the distance between signs and miracles. Signs and what? All of them are not miracles.
When we read about this, though, he does do a limited amount of miraculous work in and around Galilee because he knows that he's not accepted there like he is everywhere else. And so it's very specific that when he went here, he didn't do a miracle. He went here to see the second miracle he did. And if you kind of look at the whole thing, he didn't do very many in Galilee, but he did a lot in Judea.
Well, actually, that's where we're going because as we get into this next section of him preaching in Capernaum, he performs a lot of miracles actually in the city of Capernaum to the extent that the whole city of Capernaum comes to the front door of Peter and Andrew's house, and the whole city has come because he is continually casting out demons and performing miracles to the extent that, again, it gets out of the city of Capernaum And one of the most fascinating points to me is that in Mark chapter 1, where we're going in just a minute, he spends his whole evening casting out demons and performing miracles with the whole city of Capernaum at the front door. And it was in the wee hours of the following morning that he gets up before anybody else gets up and goes out into the wilderness and to a secluded place to find a place to pray where he could be alone. And then that's where we read about in verse 38 that Jesus tells his disciples, we've got to leave Capernaum because I can't preach here anymore because everybody's, as it were, crowding around me to continue to have me do miracles. And you know, to that point, again, how many miracles do we read of him doing in the city of Nazareth?
And also, yeah. We have him doing many wonders and signs. And what I'm saying is that he was doing these things around his brothers and in Nazareth. And people in Nazareth didn't believe that he was doing those things either. They were saying, isn't this the son of Joseph?
Right.
Because they didn't believe he was who he was. So
All
I'm saying is, miracles, when you do miracles and signs and whatever, some of those didn't, some of those miracles, some weren't.
Right. Okay, so we'll wrap things up there. And next week we're going to, again, let me go back to, I would ask you to read these contexts here, Matthew 4:13-25, and then Mark 1:16-39. That's where we'll focus our discussion next Wednesday night. Again, about his ministry there in the city of Capernaum. And again, some fascinating lessons for us in terms of what Jesus was trying to do, what he did there in that city. And I've already kind of talked about it already, but I find that fascinating. And just from the point of, I think we'll address this as we go through, but how many times did Jesus perform a miracle on someone, cast out a demon? And do you remember how many times he would say to them, don't tell anybody. And how often did people listen to him when they said, don't tell anybody that I cast a demon out of you? They wouldn't. But ultimately, the point that Jesus got to was that the crowds around him was preventing him from doing something that he needed to do, and that was teach. And again, there was that appetite for, you know, and it was also just a matter of the fact that if you had a family member who had a child who was demon-possessed, would you want your child healed? You know, if you had somebody who had an incurable disease, I understand that. But it got to the point, and we'll see this in this discussion about this ministry in Capernaum, that it was getting in the way. He didn't, and he had compassion for those who had these infirmities, who had people who were demon possessed. Absolutely. That's important. All right, thank you.